Welcome to Voices Lock of Freedom
Talk Radio.
All right, it's great to have you here today. Somebody posted yesterday about all the violence that's going on because the capital of Israel is being moved back to Jerusalem. And what does it mean, this and that, and why are the Jewish people, the country of Israel, why is it so hated? Well, let me just, right off the bat, for those that might be in a hurry this morning, they're hated because the king of this world, which is the devil, hates them because they're God's chosen people. Now, let me take you back and kind of show you where it all started here in just a little bit. So that'll be in Genesis chapter, I think it's around 12 here. Let me get you over there. But the other thing that we find out about all this is God is, he chooses people. And he already knows what you're going to be as an end result. So a lot of times we look at somebody and we say, well, that person didn't get saved. There's no way that clown, you know, or whatever. Well, at the end of the day, God knows what you're going to be someday. And, you know, you say you may have read where there's places where God quits calling. And you think, wow, how heartbreaking would it be that God quits laying it on your heart. God quits convicting you of what you're doing in life. That'd be scary, wouldn't it? But let me take you over here to, let's see here. Let me take you to, it's in Genesis, starting about 11 or 12. There's always maps here in this Bible, okay? Let me see, 11:27. Now, these are the generations of Tola. Never mind, I got too far ahead of you here. Yeah, I can't be there, so hang on here. Well, maybe I just tell you. Okay, yeah, it was Genesis chapter 12, starting in verse 2. excuse me. God makes a promise to Abram, and here's how it went. It says, now the Lord had said unto Abram, get thee out of the country from thy kindred and from thy father's house unto a land that I will show you. Now, you're looking at your fourth dispensation here, the fourth promise that's been made, okay? Now, it's going to extend this call from Abram to the giving of the law at Sinai. So this is going to take us all the way from the time that Abram is called out. He becomes God's chosen people. Why? Because God wants to show the world how he can bless people, how he can give to a certain people, how he can do something as a picture for you and me to serve the Lord. Now, that's about as clear as I can make it in that situation. So I'm trying to show. Yeah, I wanted to back up here to where he was called out. I'm just going to have to. I'm not as good. I can tell you this story, but let me just give you the history of it here this morning, and we'll let you worry about the verses here. But here's what happens. God calls Abraham out. I said, why is he wanting a chosen people unto himself? Well, you know, just kind of God gave it to me, just the concept of, I want to show you what it is like if I give all the privileges of the world to this one group of people. And you say, well, can you prove that they were given, you know, a special blessing? Well, let's just kind of walk through it a little bit. We know that Abram was promised that he would have heirs as the sand of the sea. Well, now that we go back, we find that he is the father of many nations. And I can't really go into all of it. He's of course, the father of Isaac, and Isaac being in the line of the Israelites, right? He's in that line. But he also had a son by the name of Ishmael. And a lot of the Arab community is an offspring out of the Ishmaelites. So you have that. Now, when you get into this and you start to see that all of a sudden he chooses Isaac over Ishmael, and I can go through, there's lots of different ways you can preach this message, because basically what he has done is he's decided that he would get ahead of God, because God told him he'd have an heir, okay? Well, the years went by, Sarah, his wife, was barren. So Sarah says, hey, here's Hagar, the handmaiden. You know, you've got to have, excuse me, you've got to have an heir. So Abram does probably what most men would do if their wife's brought him a woman. He goes into her, and the next thing you know, we've got Ishmael. Well, all of a sudden, you know, years pass by, however long, couldn't have been too long, because there was a fierce competition between Isaac and Ishmael. So Sarah now has the child. So Sarah says, hey, I'm the legal heir to this situation, and I don't care if he is the first son, and I don't care, you know, if I did say so. Now I'm saying, no, you're not. So you're out. Well, that's kind of how it progresses, okay? So Isaac is chosen. Isaac has a son, two sons, Esau and Jacob. Isaac's wife is a little bit conniving. She wants Jacob to get the blessing over Esau, and we've all heard about how Esau sold his birthright for a cup of soup. So there's an incident of Esau being a little on the weak side. But then there's another situation there where they dress up Jacob with just a bunch of fur on his arms, because Esau was a hairy man, it says. And he goes in to his father, Isaac, who can't see very well, and he blesses him, thinking that he has blessed Esau, because Esau was Jacob's favorite, or Isaac's favorite, sorry. So now, out of this, Jacob goes forward. Jacob ends up with 12 sons. Well, Jacob pulls a not very fatherly thing. He favors one of the 12 sons over the other sons, and he favors the one wife of the favorite son because he loved her, and he got tricked by his father-in-law into marrying the other girl first, which was Leah, and he really wanted Rachel. Thanks how it went, one way or another. But anyway, so you see where we're going with this. Man, it's been treachery. It's been family problems. You know, your family's not the only family with problems, okay? But now, these are the 12 tribes of Israel here in these 12 sons of Jacob. Jacob is told, no longer will your name be Jacob, but call yourself Israel. So he is the father of the country, coming down from Abraham, Isaac, to Jacob. Now we have 12 sons. We know the story about how Joseph gets sold into slavery, because his 12 sons or his 12 brothers were jealous of him. And I'm figuring, being a, you know, being around, having some siblings myself, that he was probably prissing around with that fancy coat on, and, you know, they just got tired of it. So they wanted to kill him, but they didn't have the nerve to do that. So they throw him in a ditch, and then they sell him into slavery. But God shows right here that God's people, you know, God can take a situation like Joseph being in the dungeon or being in the hole, being in the prison, being in this, being in the world, which is the symbol of Egypt. All of a sudden, God is still in control. He's still using Joseph to get what he needs done for his chosen people. Now, what do we go to next? Well, we find that Joseph's the number two man in Pharaoh's court, because he's able to tell Pharaoh what his dreams are. The one dream is seven fat cows come, and then seven skinny cows come. Well, he interprets the dream that for 7 years we're going to have good, crops. Everything's going to prosper, but we need to save for the following 7 years, because there's going to be a famine in the land, and we're going to starve to death if we don't do something. So, because all these nomadic/roaming tribes were struggling, they get the opportunity to come, or they don't get the opportunity, but they come to Egypt looking for food. So Joseph spots his brothers right off, but Joseph, of course, has grown up. He's changed. He's probably dressed in a more elaborate way, because he's, at this time, I think he's the number two man in Egypt, only behind Pharaoh. So we've heard the story about how he goes back and forth with the kids and, you know, with the brothers, and et cetera. Well, what ends up happening is, when it's all revealed, Joseph brings the Israelites into Egypt. Over a 400-year period, God just shows the world/Egypt that these are his chosen people. I mean, if they say something, it's accurate. If they try to make money at something, they get wealthy. I mean, they're just blessed people, and they still are today. Now, are there some poor Jews? Yeah. Are there some that, you know, are displaced? Yeah, there's poor everywhere. Jesus said, the poor you will always have with me. But you also look at a lot of businesses that are being run out there, you will find that they are run by Jewish men. Now, where did that come from? It came straight out of Abraham's promise that God made him. And that's just as plain and simple as I know how to make it for you. So from that standpoint, we go down, we look here, and we start to see that there's a plan going on for God. God's got a plan for these people. Now, Joseph and all these Egyptians, man, they multiply. I mean, they're basically, one day the Pharaoh looks up and he's like, hey, we've got problems here. These people are more than us. And I figure, I'll be honest with you, I figure Pharaoh was a little intimidated because guess what? You know, if they invent something, it prospers. If they start a business, it prospers. Everything they do prospers. Hey, we better take what these people have away from them. And I'm telling you, as a Christian, if you start smiling and you start living for Jesus out there in the world's going to try to take something away from you. So be careful on that. And I'm not saying hide your light. I'm just saying be aware of the things that are going around. So here's what happens. At the end of this 400-year period, the people have cried out to God, deliver us, deliver us. And all of a sudden, Moses comes back on the scene. He had initially been raised in Pharaoh's house. He knew some things others didn't know. But when he got old enough to see what was going on, he realized he didn't want his brothers and sisters, the Israelites, to be tortured and beat on and punished and enslaved. So he killed one. So then he had to flee. Well, now God comes to him at the burning bush, and he says, Moses, I need you to go back. So Moses goes back. We can get into the story of Moses and how reluctant he was and how he didn't, you know. But in the beginning, in leadership position with Jesus Christ, that's how it is. But by the time it's over with, Moses is praying that the sins of these people, which were many because they were disobedient as all get out, just like the original 12 sons, or most of the 12 sons, I mean, they're just, you know, they're what they are, but guess what they are? They're God's chosen people. So it doesn't matter, you know, what they are. They're not perfect. They'll never be perfect unless they get saved here and get a glorified body someday. So here it is. Moses takes them out. He takes them out into the wilderness. He takes the should have been a three-week journey to the land that God has promised. Through disobedience and different things, it takes 40 years to get to this promised land. All that Moses has went through, Moses still had a couple of strikes against him too. So he goes to the mountaintop and he looks over into the promised land. And God says, Moses, take a look over, but you're not going into the promised land. How about that? All that Moses had done, and God says, hey, you're not going in. Now, what does it mean? I don't know what that means. I don't know if it's a punishment for Moses. I don't know if it's a, hey, Moses, you've done enough for these scoundrels. I don't know. But that's what happens. Now, at this point, it's turned over to Joshua. You can read in the book of Joshua where Joshua starts marching on cities like Jericho. You've heard about the walls of Jericho falling. Well, there was a lot more than just Jericho because God said, you see this land, go take it. Well, there was 12 spies, I think, that went out, probably one from each tribe. Well, 10 of the 12 spies had come back and said, hey, we can't take this. There's giants over there. Because they didn't want to be bothered. They were free to do what they wanted. They wanted a free will of life. They didn't care about that stuff. But here's what happens. God says, look here. Here's how you're going to do this. I'm going to go before you. You just go down here and march around this city of Jericho 7 times and blow this trumpet, and the walls are going to fall. I'm going to give this to you. This territory that we're talking about, this country of Israel, they don't have all their properties yet, and we've had presidents in the past trying to give this much of Israel away and trying to appease this group. Listen, this is all Israel's. If God said it's theirs in the time of Abraham, it's theirs today. And if you're standing in the way of that, or if our country's standing in the way of that, we're going to have major problems. we're going to seek the whirlwind on that, if you will, or whatever, or the judgment or the wrath of God because we didn't aid our Israelite brothers. Because here's what happens. Now, they go in, and, I mean, people flee after a couple of battles because they know that God's leading these people out front. God is the shield. God is the sword. God's moving these things forward, and he's taking them. He's taking town after town, village after village, region after region, and they're conquering it all as they come down. Now, what's next? Well, they set up this tribe, and I've got a picture of it here I could send to you on the Facebook or something of this. Here's where Dan got this part, and Gad got this part, and, you know, Joseph's two boys split a little piece of it there. But the whole thing is, it's been constant war since then because all of the other people, for example, God would tell them to go in and destroy everybody. Well, sometimes they would do that, and God would bless. Well, sometimes they would not do that, and then God would get on them or do something to them or punish them or make them, you know, whatever he would choose at the time. But down through the times, then the kingdom split into a northern kingdom and then into a southern kingdom. So Israel had been split. Well, now since 1948, Israel has come back in to be in its own state, okay, trying to acquire this land back, if you will. I don't know if acquire is the right word. So where are we in human history? Well, because when Jesus walked the earth, he came unto his own, and his own received him not. Because those people, his own people, didn't receive him, God has put a blinder on them because it is recorded in the Bible that some people said at the punishment of Jesus, let the sins of this man be upon us and our families. So God obliged them. So God allowed the sin to be upon them and their families for generations. And that's why you had the Holocaust that you had, okay? Was that the devil? Absolutely. But it was God taking his hand off and saying, you know, here's the punishment. Was it horrendous? Absolutely. But it's a small picture of the human destruction that's going to happen in the tribulation period. So get saved today and get out of this. Jewish person gets saved. Non-Jewish person gets saved. Black, white, man, woman, whatever. Surrender to Jesus Christ to miss out on this because the wrath of God is going to be poured out on the earth for this seven-year period like never in human history. Whatever you're thinking you've been through, it is nothing against the seven-year tribulation period that could come today. It could come next week. It could come any time. So what happens during this period of time? Well, at that time, when all this breaks loose, at the end or the tribulation period, God is going to seal the Jewish people, 144,000 of them. So with 12 tribes, we got the figure that you're roughly looking at 12,000 from each tribe will be saved to do something. Now, what does that mean? Well, it basically means that there's going to be a time for these 144,000 sealed Jews to go out and tell people how to get to Jesus Christ in a personal relationship, and the scales will be dropped from their eyes, and some of the people will be able to receive Jesus because it will finally dawn on them that, hey, you know, Jesus is the real deal. This, you know, he has already come. Because, see, they're still waiting on him, you see. So we've got that. Now, we go through, people get saved, even as tough as it is, some are still going to get saved during this tribulation period. Then where do we go from here? Well, as we move further along in this situation, at the end of the seven-year tribulation period, there is a battle called Armageddon, okay? It is the appointed place. Now look, it's written down in history. It's the appointed place where the armies of the beast and the false prophet will be destroyed. So all of these countries, Iran, Russia, China, all these countries that we beat back a little bit and keep them off Israel just a little bit, which is really not us, but it's good that we're willing to help them back Israel up. All of these armies led by the Antichrist and the false prophet, okay, or the beast and the false prophet, will be destroyed by Christ descending to earth. Now, can you imagine this? The armies of the whole world come together to fight against God Almighty, and just him showing up on the scene kills them all. Now, think about that. Now, here are all these forces that come against them and their attack on Palestine. All right? The remainder of the Far Eastern army of 200 million, I'm sorry. The battle is the fulfillment of the smiting stone prophecy of Daniel 2:35. Take a note, okay? Once again, we've got the beast that's going to make himself known during this tribulation period. He's the one who has persecuted, been allowed to persecute the Jewish people throughout their history. He knows how much God loves them. He knows God's master plan for them. He knew from the beginning of time how this was going to play out. Now, what's he done? Or what's he going to do? Well, they introduce him in the book of Daniel as the little horn, okay? The abomination of desolation, the one who makes desolate. Listen, if you're going to mess with the devil, you're going to end up with nothing. The man of sin of 2 Thessalonians chapter 4, verse 8. The earth's last and most powerful tyrant. You think Hitler was bad? He's nothing. You think Genghis Khan was bad? He's nothing. You think Nero was bad? He's nothing against this Satan. So, to him, Satan gives the power which he offered to Christ in Matthew chapter 4, verses 8 and 9. So, this beast, whoever this false prophet is, or Antichrist, however you want to call it, he steps up and Satan says, let me show you what I wanted to give to Jesus. Now, Jesus, of course, you know, was a whole lot smarter. Because Jesus was God and he knew the ramifications and the whole thing. But here's one that steps up. There's a lot of people that are accepting the power today as little mini false prophets, okay? And they think they've got some power and they're really going to be in for a big surprise someday. And it's just so scary because, you know, you get a bunch of power-hungry people and you get them a little bit of ammunition and, you know, an army or something or a country, and the next thing you know, man, you got a problem, okay? So what are we doing? You know, why aren't we paying attention? Why don't we care? Well, part of the excitement of life and the advancement of technology and all the things that are going on deal with the fact, okay, that with Satan, he's letting the world think everything's okay. He's not messing with the guy that thinks he is somebody. He's not messing with the guy that thinks his job is who he is. He's not messing with the guy that thinks that doing everything but going to church is cool. Satan's messing with the guy that's thinking about coming to church. He's throwing roadblocks to the guy that wants to come on Wednesday night and just can't make it. You see what I'm saying? He's throwing roadblocks to the people on Sunday morning because, well, the babies won't get up, or baby's sick, or this or that. You see, because that's the way that the devil plays this thing out, you see. Now, at the end of time, there is a new paradise, okay? And that's the way it is. Jesus says, behold, I come quickly. There's a new heaven and a new earth, and guess what? A new Jerusalem, uh-oh, what does that mean? See, the new Jerusalem is a dwelling place throughout all eternity for the saints of all ages and fulfills the hope of Abraham for the heavenly city. That's why we're fighting it out today. That's why there's a battle like there's never been. Well, it's always been a fight there, But why? Satan's got his people fighting it out over there because the closer that city is to being set up, now it's going to be a, you know, new heaven, new earth and everything. But the new Jerusalem, that's where it's all going to happen from the foundation of the world. That's why there's fighting. That's why there's aggravation. That's why the devil's doing what he's doing over there. So be careful. Be wise to the situation. Listen, we can do something. We can do something. But we better do it now. The best thing for you to do is to surrender to Jesus Christ and to get saved and to move on to the best, most, the greatest thing that you can do, and that's Jesus. That's just the way I look at it, and I hope you look at that the same way, because God's got a master plan for your life. I'll tell you what, if you jump in there, he'll take care of you, he'll put you where you need to be, and all that other stuff will fall right in line. Have a great day. God bless.